Next presentation, nitrous oxide emissions in turf grass, effects of irrigation and nitrogen fertilization by Ross Braun and Dale Bremer, Kansas State University.
Thank you, Dr. Hurley. My name is Ross Braun. I'm a PhD student at Kansas State University. And today I'm going to be talking about nitrous oxide emissions in turf grass. So greenhouse gases, climate change, we've all heard these terms. But with greenhouse gases, what are the big three? We got nitrous oxide, carbon dioxide, and methane. With carbon dioxide making up 82% of the greenhouse gases, it's probably the one that's more commonly talked about in the public today. However, nitrous oxide has been proven to be 310 times more effective than carbon dioxide at trapping heat, trapping that long wave infrared radiation in the atmosphere, and therefore having a more potential warming effect than carbon dioxide. And as that there, and also nitrous oxide has been labeled as potentially the most ozone-depleting gas. So where is this nitrous oxide coming from? Well, it's coming from anthropogenic sources such as fertilizing agricultural soils with nitrogen, and we do that also in the turf grass industry, fertilizing with nitrogen. So we are past studies with nitrous oxide emissions in turf grass, although there are minimal research has been done. It's been shown that turf grass systems fertilized with nitrogen also emit N2O within similar ranges of agricultural soils. So what influences these nitrous oxide emissions? As I already mentioned, fertilizing, and then fertilizing around precipitation or irrigation events can really impact how much nitrous oxide is being emitted. So higher soil water content in past agricultural studies has been shown that higher soil water content has influenced nitrous oxide emissions. So therefore, in my research, I'm looking at an irrigation effect. Could we reduce irrigation, such as using a deficit irrigation, which deficit irrigation is reducing the amount of water quantity or the amount of times we are watering, but still yielding adequate turf health. So could we reduce our irrigation and possibly help reduce N2O emissions? And then combining that with a fertilizer effect, within the turf grass industry, looking at nitrous oxide emissions, the majority of the past research is just focused on quick-release fertilizers, such as urea, ammonium sulfate, calcium nitrate, and ammonium nitrate. And there hasn't been too much differences between those quick releases as far as one reducing emissions better than the other. However, looking at a controlled release, which is the newer technology in the industry, comparing that to a quick release, there's only two past turf grass studies that have compared between the two. And it's been shown that both polymer-coated or sulfur-coated, which are the controlled releases, actually haven't reduced N2O emissions. But with this research, we're looking at using the controlled release and combining that with the deficit irrigation. Could that possibly reduce N2O emissions, comparing that to a quick-release nitrogen? So the objective is to quantify the magnitude and patterns of N2O emissions in turf grass and determine how irrigation and nitrogen fertilization may be managed to reduce these N2O emissions that we are emitting in the turf grass industry and help maybe lower the what we're contributing in the turf grass industry to the greenhouse gas budget. So this is a two-year field study done in Manhattan, Kansas. It was done underneath an automated rainout shelter, which would turn on automatically when it got 0.25 millimeters of water from precipitation. And the turf grass was Meyer-Zois grass, being mowed at a little bit higher than normal golf course fairway height because we had restrictions with our base collars in the ground due to sampling the N2O. The experiment design was set up as a randomized complete block design, including six blocks, and our treatment design was a two-way factorial. For treatment, so we had a two-way factorial. Our two main effects are fertilizer and irrigation, as I already mentioned. Our three levels of fertilizer are urea, which is our quick release, and that was applied at a rate of 49 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, both in June and July, equaling a total nitrogen load of 98 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Our control release was the polymer-coated urea, and again, that was applied at the same total nitrogen 98 kilograms of nitrogen per year, and it was only applied just in June because that's common practice to apply the controlled release just once in the beginning of summer and then let it release over summertime. Then we also included an untreated control, which was no nitrogen fertilizer being applied. Our two irrigation levels were two different irrigation deficit levels, which included a medium-low irrigation, which was 50% ET replacement, and a medium irrigation, which was 75% ET replacement. So irrigation during the summertime, this is when we had the automated rainout shelter turned on. This was in the months of June, July, and August, both in 2014 and 2015. So both we had the irrigation and the fertilizer treatments were applied in 2014 summer, even though we didn't start sampling our N2O until October. And then we applied the treatments again in 2015, which in 2015 we were sampling throughout this entire year. So the plots were hand-watered during this summertime period when the automated rainout shelter was turned on, and the amount of water was calculated from the daily ET from an on-site weather station. For data collected, we started collecting our N2O measurements in October 29, 2014, day of the year 302, and this went all the way up to October 5, 2015, and this year, day of the year 278. So this is our first full year of research, just wrapping up, and then we've already started on our second year here. So the N2O flux measurements, how we measure these, we use static vented PVC chambers, and you can see the summary of the list of materials we use there. And we extracted the gas. If you're not familiar with this process, we would extract gas from the chambers here in the second picture. This is our static vented PVC chamber, which we'd place on the base collars at the time of sampling and extract gas at 0 minutes, which would be the ambient air concentration of the N2O, and then extract again at 20 minutes and then again at 40 minutes. So then we'd have our concentration increase over time. We'd take our gas samples back to the lab, run it through gas chromatograph, and we'd be able to get our increase in concentration of N2O over an hour, over a day, and then take our sampling days and be able to calculate the cumulative fluxes over the entire year. So for other data collected, at each sampling date of sampling the N2O, we took soil nitrate and ammonium levels, soil water content, and soil temperature, because in past agricultural and turfgrass studies with N2O, there's been weak, strong correlations between any number of these four measurements with N2O emissions. So we're going to be looking at the correlations, not today, but more when we have time, and then also for modeling purposes, we want to have these measurements. And then we also monitored turf health, and how we monitored that was with visual quality and digital images to calculate percent green cover. The digital images were taken underneath the light box, and this was done mid-May before we turned on the automated rainout shelter and applied the treatments, and then up to a month after the treatment, so we could make sure none of the plots dropped below the acceptable turf quality since we were applying these deficit irrigation levels. For data analysis, this was a two-way factorial analysis of variance using the GLIMMICS procedure of SAS 9.2. For results, before I get into the specifics of results, I just want to point out right away, for our irrigation main effect, there were minimal differences, and on the dates that we did have statistical differences, the differences were minimal due to the two different irrigation levels. However, looking at the plots, the soil water content, there were differences within the soil water content, as you would expect with two different irrigation levels. However, they just did not produce major differences with the N2O fluxes. Therefore, I'm going to be focusing on the fertilizer main effect, looking at three different fertilizer levels. So just starting out, looking at the cumulative annual N2O fluxes, on the y-axis here we have our cumulative N2O fluxes, and on the x-axis we have our day of the year. Remember, we started sampling in October 2014 and concluded in October 2015 here for our first entire year. Our dashed line here is our two fertilization dates, and with the urea, remember, being applied on both dates, and the polymer coated only being applied on June 2nd. The untreated is the black line, urea, which is our quick release, is the blue line, and the polymer coated, the controlled release, is the red line. So you can see here all three fertilizer treatments were similar up until that first fertilization date, and you can see urea have a large spike contributing to the cumulative fluxes, and then again after the second fertilizer date on July 16th. We didn't see that with polymer coated, the controlled release, and it really didn't start to separate from the untreated fertilizer treatment until about 45 to 50 days after that polymer coated was applied. So the overall, what we saw after this first year was urea at 2.7 kilograms N2O in per hectare per year, which was statistically different than the controlled release and the untreated. And how do these numbers compare to past research? Within the turfgrass industry, those that have calculated cumulative annual N2O fluxes saw across various turfgrass species and across various fertilization regimes, it's been in the range of 1 to 3.85. So our numbers fall right within that range. And then looking at past agronomy research, Dr. Jason Kay in Colorado compared urban lawns to irrigated corn, and the numbers for turfgrass was 2.4 and irrigated corn was 2.0. So you can see turfgrass has right around the same numbers, similar to or around that numbers of agronomy fields. So we are contributing into emissions similar to agronomy cropping systems. So just zooming in on the fertilization date, what was actually going on, and you could see this with the cumulative N2O flux graph before, but you can see after each fertilization date here, again, with on the y-axis is our N2O flux, and the dashed line is when we fertilize urea on both dates, we have a huge spike in N2O flux, and we just didn't see that with the controlled release. When you're combining a controlled release with a deficit irrigation, you're just not getting that flux in N2O that you're seeing with the urea, and that's with the high flux with the urea, that's what's contributing to the overall higher annual N2O flux for the entire year. And then just to also point out, the highest flux that we saw with urea was 88.1, which was after the second fertilization date here. And the highest flux we saw with the polymer coated, which is 71.1, was actually about 45 to 50 days after, as I mentioned, of applying the polymer coated back on June 2nd. And then down here with the circles, I just wanted to point out, after we fertilized the urea, it generally took 10 to 15 days for these high fluxes to return back down to normal background levels that we're seeing within the rest of the study, not around the fertilization dates. And then with the polymer coated, when it did hit that spike of 71.1, it generally took again around 10 days to return back down to the normal levels that we were seeing. And then just also to point out, I didn't have, since I'm limited on time today, about the visual quality and the percent green cover with the digital images, since we wanted to monitor the turf health, because we're applying these deficit irrigation levels. Within all three fertilization treatments, they all maintained acceptable turf quality and high percent green cover. However, the polymer, the controlled-release polymer-coated nitrogen and the quick-release urea actually had higher turf quality, statistically higher turf quality than the untreated. And the polymer-coated actually had more consistent high quality than the urea, which the urea would spike in high turf quality and then start to decrease until it got that second fertilization. So in conclusion, we saw minimal differences due to the irrigation levels. So further research is required with our deficit irrigation levels, and then we're going to be looking at that more in year two and really focusing on that, trying to stress the turf, push the turf even more. And then all fertilizer treatments maintain acceptable turf quality. However, the controlled release did maintain more consistent visual high-quality ratings throughout the summertime than the urea or the untreated. The urea fertilizer had higher peak fluxes and overall higher annual emissions than the polymer-coated urea. The polymer-coated nitrogen fertilizer. And so the controlled-release nitrogen fertilizer, such as the polymer-coated, we saw that if you combine that with deficit irrigation in turfgrass systems, it could potentially help mitigate N2O emissions in turfgrass systems and lower what we're contributing to the greenhouse gas budget here in the turfgrass industry. With that, acknowledgments, there's quite a list of people I'd like to thank, but also just the entire turfgrass team at Kansas State, the Horticulture Department, and the USGA for funding this research. With that, any questions?
Are you surprised that irrigation didn't have an effect? You think it's the way you irrigated that didn't cause an effect? You put the urea out, watered it, and sort of, I'm assuming you were watering it during those pulses too, right?
Yes, yeah. It'd be.
So are you surprised? I guess my question is, are you surprised that irrigation didn't have an effect? You were expecting it.
Yeah, so the question was I surprised that the irrigation levels didn't have any effect on the N2O fluxes? Yeah, we expected to possibly see some type of irrigation effect applying more water at the higher irrigation levels than the lower irrigation levels. So that's why in year two here we're going to look at maybe trying to open that up a little bit and have a bigger difference between our irrigation levels, drop a little bit lower with our lower irrigation level, decrease that even more to stress the turf, and probably keep the top one around the same, see if we can see if it kind of tease out that difference.
So maybe go down to 30%.
30%, yes.
Because you didn't show the soil moisture.
No, I didn't, no. So, yeah, decrease that and even stress the turf even more, because even with our 50% depth of irrigation, we didn't get anything, like on a 1 to 9 visual scale, we didn't drop below 6.5. So we were hoping to stress the turf even more. So we're going to have to look into that. So, okay, can you repeat the question real quick?
Did you see any sort of correlation between the expected lifetime of the controlled release nitrogen fertilizer and when you actually saw the increase in the emissions?
So, okay, so did I see any correlation between the spike in the polymer coated control release and the duration it was expected to release?
Yeah.
So, like, looking at, like, the visual quality or the percent green cover, if that's increasing. We're going to be looking more into the correlations. We haven't had time to analyze that data. I have done correlations looking at like the soil water content and the soil temperature with the N2O fluxes, and we do have a significant correlation, however, they are pretty weak. So that's what has been in past studies too. It's just been inconsistent with the correlations.
Okay, we'll need to keep moving and save questions till the end if you would, just to stay on track. Let's thank our speaker.